Guess what? We've made it to Friday, and it's time for Wisconsin Weekend. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. We're getting schooled on winter autocross in Elkhart Lake. It's you and your vehicle on a course navigating those orange traffic cones, testing your handling skills against the clock. I, for one, would be white-knuckling it for sure. Do you autocross? Do you race go-karts or compete in other motorsports? Or maybe you just like doing donuts in the parking lot? What do you love about driving on a closed course? We're at 800-642-1234 for you to join in. John Evert is Communications Director for Road America. That's a road racing course in Elkhart Lake. John, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Well, thank you. Thank you for having me.
So for people who have never visited it, tell us more about Road America. What is this?
Well, what's really cool, in short, Road America is a 4-mile, 14-turn road course in Elkhart Lake, Wisconsin. And what's great about it is we have 10 major events every year, everything from motorcycles to IndyCar, NASCAR, stadium super trucks, sports cars, SCCA, you name it, across the board, 10 major events. Over 500 total events throughout the season, starting in April and going all the way through October. And what's really great about it is that you can come up and you can do all sorts of things at Road America, whether it be go-karting, whether it be sunset cruising, whether it be 4 miles of fitness on the track, all sorts of things. But right now, what's great is winter is coming. As we well know, we've all heard there's a big storm coming here to southeast Wisconsin, which couldn't be more perfect because we have winter autocross. Starting tomorrow, we have actually 3 dates for winter autocross. But starting tomorrow is the first day, and we're excited about this snowfall. Hopefully we get a little bit, maybe Friday night going into Saturday, because with winter autocross, what's cool is that slow is fast. And people go, wait a minute, what are you talking about? You're a race course. You're a racetrack. What do you do? People can bring their own vehicles, and you go on the winter autocross course for time, and the lowest time wins. So you really don't want to go too fast around a turn or through a slalom area and go off course, because then that stops the clock. So you want to be able to stay on course, and you want to be able to finish with the lowest time, because the lowest time wins. And people use their own vehicles. There's 3 classes. There's all-wheel drive, there's four-wheel drive, and there's rear-wheel drive. And that what's great about that is that you can come out in a car, you can come out in a truck, you can come out in a compact vehicle, you can even come out in a hybrid and try winter autocross. And have a lot of fun with family and friends.
You are so inclusive, John. I love it. So what are these 14 turns like? How difficult is this course?
Well, the road course is 4 miles and 14 turns. Our winter autocross takes place in our upper paddock, where it's a much smaller course, probably only a few hundred yards, maybe about a half mile or a mile. And it only takes a couple minutes really to finish it, which is why we can get quite a few cars through there. And what's great about it is that when you're in your own vehicle and you're having fun on the winter autocross course, you're able to learn the performance characteristics of the vehicle better. Know when you're going into a skid. Know about how not to overcorrect going into a skid, not to turn into a skid. How to brake sooner and slower to be able to maneuver your vehicle through these various areas. So winter autocrossing is not only fun, but it also teaches you all about how to be safer in your vehicle when you're dealing with ice and snow and tricky conditions.
We're talking with John Evert. He's Communications Director for Road America. That's a road racing course in Elkhart Lake. Do you autocross? Do you perhaps race go-karts or participate in other motorsports? What do you love about driving? Do you have suggestions for where people can go to do motorsports here in Wisconsin? Join in 800-642-1234. You can email ideas at WPR.org. John, if you don't want to put your car on the course, can you use someone else's or can you rent one?
We do have school vehicles that we use for teen driving and also winter driving. Those vehicles are not available for rent when you come for winter autocross. We encourage people to bring their own vehicles. Again, we've seen vehicles all the way from, you know, basically street legal vehicles to more high performance and even exotic cars that are built for the street. Interestingly enough, you'll see everything from a Volkswagen Jetta all the way up to a Porsche running winter autocross. You'll see everything from your basic four-wheel drive sedan all the way up to mom's minivan running the autocross course. And that's what's fun about it, is that for winter autocross especially, we encourage people to run their own vehicles, because we want them to become more confident behind the wheel in their own vehicle on winter type conditions. And this is a nice closed environment where you can come, have a lot of fun, and actually learn a lot. If you want to gain more skills behind the wheel, we have winter driving courses, which actually talk about speed braking, collision avoidance, and all kinds of winter driving techniques in a closed course environment. So our winter driving school and our programs brought to you by West Bend Insurance are another great way to gain more confidence behind the wheel when the weather gets dicey in the wintertime.
Well, here's a pressing question for you. How does Mom's minivan do on your course?
Surprisingly enough, a lot of the minivans actually have done a lot better than some of the high-performance cars because slow is fast. What we mean by slow is fast is slow is better. So if you're going slow, if you're being careful around the course, you're able to stay on course. You're able to maneuver the turns, maneuver the slalom, maneuver the various braking areas a lot easier. And you have probably a little bit more weight in the vehicle, so you're able to finish before a high-performance car, which revs a lot higher, which probably spins out in some of the corners, which probably loses traction. So Moms might fare better than your local businessman running his high expensive performance vehicle.
So, John, if you do get a bunch of snow, do you treat the course in any way? Do you prep it in any way?
We actually do. We have several types of equipment to where we're able to smooth out the snow. We're able to form a course. Essentially, we want to make sure that the course where the cars are driving predominantly is a little bit sort of matted down a little bit, driven on so that way you've got an ice rink type of scenario in certain areas and also sort of crushed ice in other areas. So we try to provide different varying conditions. Again, Mother Nature always helps out. Sometimes the sun comes out and melts it a little bit. Sometimes we get a little bit of snow on top of it. So that also creates different conditions. Much the same as the conditions you're going to see on your average roadways if they have not been plowed, or sometimes if they have been plowed and some additional weather has come through. This is the type of experience that we want everybody to have so that way they can experience their vehicle, understand their vehicle, and know when their vehicle is going to need, they're going to need to slow down or they're going to need to use their vehicle in a different manner when ice and snow exists on the roadways.
So, John, how did you get bitten by the autocross bug?
Well, surprisingly enough, I've been in the industry for many, many years. Autocrossing is a way that we learn to open our venue to the public in more ways. We're a very dynamic venue. We have a lot of different offerings at Road America, and we're also a year-round venue, especially now with winter autocross. So January 11th, February 1st, and March 7th are when people can come and enjoy the autocross. I enjoy it because you can use your own vehicle. A lot of people wonder, how can I get into having fun? And you can bring your own vehicle and have a real good time.
What do you drive?
I drive basically a Chevy Traverse.
Really?
Yes, just a Chevy Traverse.
Okay. How does it do?
You know what? It does quite well, but I do like to get a little bit excited. You're always trying to probably finish a little bit sooner before the person next to you. There are two courses set up, and I do quite well, but I have lost to a few folks who I didn't really expect to lose to. So I just need to probably slow down and be a little bit more patient when I'm behind the wheel.
We're talking winter autocross with Road America's John Evert in the driver's seat. Do you think you'd give winter autocross a try? Have you mastered driving in bad weather conditions and negotiating turns on snow and ice? Maybe you just love to drive on closed courses. Share your thrills right now, 800-642-1234. There's a line for you. Email ideas, allthingsautocross@wpr.org. Back in a moment for more Wisconsin Weekend with John Evert right here on the Ideas Network. If you're just joining us, we're into winter autocross here on Wisconsin Weekend. I'm Kate Archer-Ken. Thanks for being here. So this is Off Street. It's a closed course time trial with a variety of challenges. And here comes the sell job. This is the perfect place to hone your winter driving skills with a variety of challenges. Think like those orange cones, sharp turns. Are you in? do you do autocross? Line is yours. Tell us what you love about driving close courses. 800-642-1234. John Everett is Communications Director for Road America. That's a road racing course in Elkhart Lake that's home to the winter autocross season with events scheduled for tomorrow. Then there's a couple more in February and March, and he stays with us. So, John, how many vehicles are you going to be pushing through tomorrow? How many will try that course?
Well, what's good news, again, we have weather coming in. So we have right now 75 vehicles registered. You can also register as you drive in or arrive. So we always encourage people that if they're hearing the show or if they're reading about it online at roadamerica.com, that they can still register all the way up until to when the event starts. And we have a lot of capabilities to host quite a few vehicles. We've had as many as 120 to 150 before. The weather hasn't been that great leading up to this first event. So we're anticipating more now that the weather forecast is turning for the better in case of winter. So again, anywhere between 75 and 150 vehicles is good, but we're more than willing to bring more. Again, we have front wheel, rear wheel, and all-wheel drive classes, and we encourage people to bring their own vehicle, come out and really enjoy their vehicle, as well as learn a lot how their vehicle performs on ice and snow.
Yeah, is there some coaching and camaraderie? Because I can imagine if I did the course, they'd be like, you know, Kate, you could use some help out there because that was pretty ugly.
Right, absolutely. We have all of our top driving instructors available. So sometimes if somebody wants an instructor to ride with them during a practice run, they're more than willing to do so and provide some tips and tricks about how not to oversteer, how not to understeer, how to brake way early before coming into a turn, and how to accelerate after leaving a turn, so that way you're not spinning your tires, you're not sliding out, you're not spinning out, and you're able to get a better possible time. Our driving instructors also work on our team driving courses and our winter driving courses, and they can provide more information if you would like yourself or one of your family members to gain more confidence behind the wheel in either one of those courses as well.
Do you find this a safe, or have you seen people roll their vehicles?
Well, what's really good about it is that the area that we race in or do autocrossing in is very, very flat. It's extremely flat and it's entirely paved. So, and the cars really don't go that fast. You really don't go that fast in your vehicle because you want to stay on course. Plus, the snow is usually built up high enough and we don't really have berms or anything like that. So when you slide off course, imagine you're just sort of sliding off on a frozen lake. So you got to come back on course, and it's very, very hard, obviously, to get back on course because your tires are spinning and you're still trying to get a little bit of traction. So it's extremely safe. We've never had any incidents. The only thing that we've really damaged is maybe an orange cone or two.
Well, we can let those orange cones go. So can you give us some tips, John? You know, winter is upon us for sure. Got a lot of snow coming in, or even the north has got plenty of snow. If you're hitting some ice, you're trying to make a sharp corner, what should you do?
Well, the number one thing is you always, we'd like to say, is slow down. With ice and snow, take it slow. So as you're driving on ice and snow, as somebody who's worked in this industry and also as a first responder and firefighter, EMT, always give yourself way more time to get to where you're going. Always slow down quite a bit more than you would normally go. Make sure to keep at least 8 to 10 seconds following distance between the car of yourself and the car in front of you. If you see emergency vehicles off to the right side of the road or any side of the road, make sure to give them lots of room. Also, if you feel yourself sliding into a skid, don't brake. Just release the brakes, steer into the skid, and be careful. Yeah, you may go off into the ditch. Yeah, you may slide a little bit, but you can gain more control by not braking too hard. Once you brake too hard, your wheels essentially lose contact with the road and the ice, and you slide a lot more. But the number one thing with ice and snow, take it slow. With all of this snow coming in tomorrow and tomorrow night, bottom line, if you don't have to go out, stay home and make sure to just drive slowly, accelerate and decelerate slowly. Give yourself a lot of time before coming to a stop, coming to a roundabout, and slow down more so than you would ever think you would need to. Know your brakes, whether you have anti-lock brakes or not. Keep the heel of your foot on the floor and use the ball of your foot to apply firm, steady pressure on the brake pedal. And don't stop if you can avoid it. The big difference in the amount of inertia it takes to stop from moving to a full stop versus how much it takes to get moving while still rolling. If you can slow down enough to keep rolling just a little bit until a traffic light changes, you might be better off in that case, making sure that there's not a car in front of you, obviously. And don't power too hard when you're trying to go uphill. Applying extra gas on snow-covered roads will just make your wheels spin. So try to give a little inertia going before you reach the hill and let the inertia carry you to the top. And also, don't stop when going up a hill, because once you stop, you've got to get your wheels turning again, and that's where you can slide and end up sliding backwards. So it's always important to, you know, maybe attend a winter autocross, maybe attend a winter driving program, learn some of these tips and techniques so you're safer out there and you understand it, and you have more confidence when you're going from home to work, taking your kids to school, things like that.
Yeah, it sounds like if you can just apply those skills, actually feel how to do it, it's easier than to actually have to perform it when Mother Nature hits.
The biggest thing that causes accidents in winter is when people over-exaggerate the characteristics of their vehicle. They're not expecting what is going to happen, and then they go off the roadway or unfortunately end up in an accident. And it's right when you don't expect it to happen is when it does happen. So that's why you need to be extra alert, especially when the weather becomes a little bit unsavory, and just be more careful out there. Give yourself a lot more time. And again, especially with the snow tomorrow night, going into late Saturday night, as a first responder and firefighter, if you don't have to go out, stay home. You know, binge some movies on Netflix, make sure you got enough food in the fridge, and really enjoy it. Wait till the weather passes and the roads have been plowed before going out.
Talking with John Everett, Communications Director for Road America. That's a road racing course in Elkhart Lake. Have you lived in Wisconsin for a long time and figured out how to stay safe when you're driving in bad weather conditions? Still time for you at 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. So, John, let's say you are trying to get some traction and you're stuck. Your wheels are just turning. Are there any tips for that? How do you get unstuck?
Well, what's really interesting is we always try to tell all of our participants, whether it's winter autocross or winter driving, to make sure to have your vehicle stocked up. And what surprises a lot of people is a great way to gain traction if you happen to go off a roadway where you're just in a slippery situation, maybe trying to go uphill or even in your driveway. A box or a bag of kitty litter in your trunk can work wonders because it provides just enough traction if you pour it underneath the tires to really sort of get yourself going. A small snow shovel, a broom, and an ice scraper is also good. Sometimes people have been stuck in a ditch, and you can possibly use a floor mat to get out of that. But we recommend probably a bag or a box of kitty litter. Jumper cables, a flashlight, and warning devices are also great to have in your car. Make sure to bring extra blankets. Make sure to have an extra stocking cap, an extra set of mittens. If your car happens to go off the roadway into a ditch and you're in a remote area, it might take a long time for people to get to you. And you're going from a warm climate, having the heater on in your car, to a cold climate. So make sure you have something to withstand that cold climate if you have to get out and look and assess your vehicle. Also make sure to have anywhere you're going, especially if you're going a long distance, if you're driving a long distance to visit family or friends, make sure to have your cell phone on you. Make sure to have it charged. You may be in an area where there's not good cell service. So if you know you're traveling a long distance and you're going to visit somebody or going to a place, make sure to let people know your route. Make sure to let people know when you leave and when you're expected to be there. So that way, if you're in an area where there's no cell service or very poor cell service and something happens, people know the route that you're traveling on and they can actually inform authorities or check to see the status of what might be happening out there to make sure that you're safe.
Well, let's take a call now. Russ in Stoughton is joining us. Hi, Russ.
Good morning. I had a question as far as competition on the course. If you're driving an older car without ABS brakes, are you going to be at a disadvantage over a newer car that most likely would have it?
Well, generally, ABS vehicles with ABS brakes usually always work a little bit better. But again, slow is always fast. So we encourage people to take a couple practice runs, whether they have ABS brakes or not ABS brakes. Make sure to understand the characteristics of the vehicle. And if you perform or execute the course in the right manner, vehicles without ABS brakes have performed equally as opposed to vehicles with ABS brakes, because it's really all about making sure that you can maneuver through the corners, maneuver through the turns, maneuver through the slalom areas efficiently. And I don't mean fast, I mean efficiently, and then you'll probably get a better time. So older vehicles and newer vehicles compete one-on-one right beside each other. So not necessarily a competitive advantage, you'd be surprised. I've seen an old Audi Quattro beat a brand new Porsche. I've seen an old 1965 Mustang beat a brand new Subaru WRX. So it really depends on how slow and effective you're managing the course.
Well, Russ, hope you give it a shot. And John, thank you so much for joining us.
Well, thank you so much again. RoadAmerica.com for anybody that's interested in participating in our winter autocross.
John Evert is Communications Director for Road America. Coming up, we're on a different type of course. It's an endearing winter sport that's not just for humans, but also dogs, sometimes even horses. Skijoring. Do you skijore with dogs or horses? What is it like training them? Do you like watching skijoring or sled dog racing? We're at 800-642-1234. Wisconsin Weekend continues right after this news update. Stay with us here on the Ideas Network. You're with us for Skijoring on Wisconsin Weekend. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Skijoring comes from the Norwegian word for ski driving. 1 to 3 dogs are usually used. Horses work too. So picture a cross-country skier with her dog on a harness, and away we go. So do you skijore? How did you get involved in the sport? Do you skijore with dogs or horses? What is it like training them? Are there places people should go to watch skijoring in action? Join in, 800-642-1234. Melissa Amernick is vice president of the Wisconsin Trailblazers Sled Dog Club. She's been working with sled dogs for 25 years, and we're reaching her in Gleason this morning. Mel, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Good morning.
Well, paint us a picture here, because some people may not be familiar with skijoring. What does it look like? How does it work?
Well, you have a pair of skis. What I use is skate skis. You can use the classic, where you do the stride in the track, but the skate skis, you can go much faster. The person wears a belt. It's usually padded and it goes around your waist. And then there's a quick release that attaches you to a bungee line. That bungee line is then attached to the harness that's on your dog. And preferably I use a dog, not a horse. But one of my dog's name is Pony.
Oh, nice. So does Pony pull you a little bit? Do you get some extra speed?
Yes. There are some amazing skiers out there that can ski as fast or faster than my sled dogs. I'm not one of them. So I do much better having a dog pull me. I get a lot more speed. In fact, I'm in the sprint part of the aspect of sled dog racing. So my dogs can, at the fastest, going downhill up to 30 miles an hour for a short bit. We average about 16 to 20 otherwise.
Wow, Pony is a pony, I think. What do the dogs think of this? Do they like it?
They love it. Mostly what I'm doing is because of their love for running. There's days like today where I have a little bit of a cold. I'd like to just sleep in, but as soon as I'm talking with you, I'm going to go out and hook up my teams. Because they want to. That's what they live for. I do have many of them in the house with me, too, that run. So it's not so much that they have to run. This is something they're born to do. It's in their bloodlines.
Mel, what kind of dogs do you have?
Mine are a mix. I have Alaskan Huskies mixed with hounds. And this is to get more speed. So I have some Greyhound in some of them, some Pointer Cross mixes, so some bird dogs. And there's a few, I think, that might have some other bird dogs mixed in there, too. They're mutts, but they're bred specifically for the circuit that we're racing in. So they're very valuable in our race circuit.
What is a circuit like? How long are the races, and where do they go?
Well, I'm involved with the Wisconsin Trailblazer Sled Dog Club, which has their own group of races. Next weekend, Merrill, Wisconsin is having our first race of the season. It'll be our 21st race at Merrill. And we start out with skijoring. That's the first class of the day. And we go 4 miles. And it works out perfect because we're grooming these trails for the sled dog races. And skijoring kind of got started because of that. We're like, where can we go where we can run dogs with our skis? and the Sled Dog Club was the perfect venue. So next weekend at Merrill would be a great time to go out and see ski touring and sled dog racing.
So there are more than just you out there on the track, on the trail. How does it work when a skier is trying to pass another one and you've got the dogs and the dogs may want to interact with each other? That's what dogs do. Are they trained not to?
There's a whole lot of work that goes into training yourself and your dog before you ever get to a race. At least that's the optimistic. So you start with a puppy or an adult, and if they have no training, your best bet is to find someone that has a trained dog that knows what they're doing. When you think about little kids learning something new, they learn it from someone that knows how to do it. Mainly it's their parents. Well, it's the same thing with dogs. I train my young dogs or inexperienced older dogs with other dogs that know exactly what they're doing. And to learn to pass is taking a lot of practice because most dogs are social and they want to say, hey, how's it going, and stop and visit. So we use commands because we do not have any way to, we don't have a leash other than attached to their harness. It's very difficult to steer a dog by their harness because it's at the back end of them. So there's nothing attached to the neck other than a guidance rope to keep the two dogs tied together if you're running more than one. So we use commands. The one to get them started, which we really don't need because they're going to go no matter what, is hike, hike, or let's go. We don't use mush like in the movies because it's not very exciting. Mush is just a soft word. Hike is a much more sharp, it's more effective. To slow them down, we use whoa.
Uh-huh.
To turn right is G. To turn left is haw. And to pass the team is on by. These are very, very similar to like team horses, same commands.
We're talking with Melissa Omernick. She's vice president of the Wisconsin Trailblazers Sled Dog Club. We're learning about ski-joring. Do you do it? Have you tried it? Are you going to watch any of the events? Join in with your experiences and your questions, 800-642-1234. You can tweet us at WPR Mornings. Mel, I understand there's also dry land ski-joring, which you do when there isn't snow on the ground. How does that work?
Well, we don't use skis. We use our feet, so that's canicross, where you can use the exact same equipment except you put on a pair of tennis shoes and you run behind your dog. That is very popular, especially down near the cities, larger cities, because people want to get out and exercise with their dogs. So this is a very easy way, easy so far as equipment. It's very hard on the human because we have two legs, the dogs have four, so you really have to move. Another way is you can hook your dog to your bike. That's called bike during. And we use a special line in the front so that the rope can stay off your tire. And then there's also rig racing, where you hook to like a 3 or 4 wheeled rig instead of a sled. And then scooter. It's a off-road scooter. So they have like dirt bike, like tires and suspension many times. And you stand on a platform while your dog is hooked to the front of the scooter.
So there are lots of different options out there when there isn't snow, but I suspect you like the straight-up ski-joring.
I love ski-joring. That's my sport. I think it's just the best.
Where did it originate?
I'm not a great historian, but my understanding is over near Finland, Norway, Sweden, in the countries where skiing was a way of getting around. And my understanding is they used reindeer. Well, as it came over here to the United States, we don't have reindeer. Our deer aren't real fond of being hooked up, I'm guessing. horses were used, and then dogs. Sled dogs are very commonly used in Alaska and Canada as a means of transportation. And many times people were skiing or snowshoeing to get from place to place because of the amount of snow. So it saves time and effort by hooking up an animal that's well-trained to get from place to place. Now, in our area now, it's for competition and fun.
Have you ever tried it with horses?
No. I don't know if I would. If the opportunity arose and it was a really nice horse, maybe. But
so tell us about some of these upcoming ski-joring events and what people should check out.
Well, this weekend, my husband and I are going to be racing in the Twin Cities at a It's called Highland State Park Reserve.
Mm-hmm.
And we have a ski jour race affiliated with a ski race. And then the following weekend will be at the Merrill Sled Dog Races. And then also on January 26th, there is a ski jour race in Marquette, Michigan. And then in Wisconsin, there'll be Land O'Lakes, Wisconsin. It's called the Three Bears Sled Dog Race. That'll be February 1st and 2nd. And then also on, looks like February 1st, Iola Winter Carnival has a ski jouring competition. So, I have not been to that one, but someday I think I'll have to check that out.
Which one is your favorite?
I would say my favorite ski jouring competition is probably coming up on February 20th is the Barky Berkey.
Oh.
In Wisconsin. That one is just so amazing. There's people out there with, they're really good skiers because that is a big ski competition.
Sure.
And maybe bringing their pet dogs that aren't great sled dogs, but it's such a great atmosphere. People are happy. The dogs are so excited, and it's a carnival-like atmosphere.
What's the course like?
Most of the ski jour competitions has a nice wide track because when you skate ski, your skis are going to the side. So generally, it has to be minimum about 10 feet, 12 is better, 14 is great. So it's a nice wide track, so there's room so you can pass and ski at the same time. And the distances vary. For beginners, we have about 2 miles. For more experienced, 4 miles. The race this weekend I'm doing is 6 miles. So it's different where you go. There are some long distance races. There's one in the Yukon Territory that goes 200 some miles. That's not for me.
Oh, wow. That would be
one over in Europe. Yeah.
Yeah, that would be a feat. How do you keep the dogs hydrated out there, making sure that they are healthy?
Just like with human athletes, before the competition, you make sure that they've been having a well-balanced diet leading up to this race, and they're hydrated before the race. Minimum an hour and a half before the race, I'd like them to be drinking a good quantity. So we bait their water with something that they really like. And then we tend to not feed them at minimum 6 hours before the race so they don't take care of business on the trail. We call that brown clister when they have dog poop on the trail because your skis are not going to slide very fast through that. So feeding is a timing thing with the sled dogs. And as soon as they're done running, they get a special recovery drink. It's not electrolytes like humans need. Dogs don't sweat, but they pant to stay cool. So they're burning calories. So it's an energy drink that has a lot of fat in it. As the sled dogs and the dogs that we race with need that to regain their energy. So you get a special drink when they're done, and they're very, water is fine too.
We have to pause right here. We're learning all about the world of ski jouring with Mel Amernick. You can join in 800-642-1234. Back in a minute for more Wisconsin Weekend right here on the Ideas Network. It is all things ski jouring here on Wisconsin Weekend. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Thanks for being here. Ski jouring falls under the category of sled dog sports, and there are places to learn. Minocqua Winter Park holds ski jouring clinics. And a shout out to the February ski jouring events. The Madison Winter Festival has ski jouring on the square. There's Three Bear Winter Sled Dog Race in Land O'Lakes, the Northern Pines Sled Dog Race in Iron River, and then how about that Barky Berkey Ski Jour in none other than Hayward, as we've been talking about. Where do you like to watch ski jouring? Do you have a sled dog race you watch that's coming up? Join in at 800-642-1234. You can email ideas at WPR.org. Mel Amernick is vice president of the Wisconsin Trailblazers Sled Dog Club, and she stays with us. Mel, how close-knit is that club? It sounds like this club has been around for quite some time.
Yes, the Trailblazers has been around. It was chartered in 1966, and the primary purpose of our club is to promote our sled dog racing and the welfare and the needs of dogs, and to educate people about the sport and about taking care of their dogs. And we're a very good group to work with because we all love dogs. So it makes, in my estimation, a good group of people.
I understand that you are an ER nurse. What are the health implications here? How much exercise do you get out of ski-joring?
The number one reason I'm in the sport is it is the best therapy for me, physically and mentally. Winter is a long season, and many people struggle with depression and weight gain during the winter months. For me, I don't deal with that. I get outside because I have to, not because I want to some days when it's very cold or I'm very tired, because my dogs need me. They need me to be out there running with them, and they love it, and it makes me feel so good. And once you get outside and get moving in that fresh, cold winter weather, it really helps you to feel great. Once in a while, I will pick up this head cold, but as a rule, being outside with your dogs, moving and being active makes you a very healthy and much happier person.
So if someone is interested in trying this out, doesn't have dogs or equipment, are there easy on-ramps to start ski-joring?
The best bet is to ask someone that's doing it. I get phone calls from people that are interested, and I will mentor and guide you to the best of my ability, or to go to an event to see it in action and then talk to that person that's in the competition afterwards. The best time is to talk to them afterwards, the key thing, because we're all a little bit focused on the race ahead of time. There is clinics this weekend on Sunday up at Minocqua Winter Park. We are doing ski-jure demonstrations and assisting people. Madison also has a ski-juring clinic at Elver Park, but it looks like that clinic is full, but you can still go to listen, and that's Sunday, February 2nd. So there are clinics that pop up if you go into Google search and pull it up. But I'm available to anyone that has interest. Contact me through my email.
So do you give the dogs a lot of praise afterward? How do they feel?
If you could see their faces when they're done running, if dogs are smiling, that's what they're doing. I praise them during the run and most especially afterwards, usually hugging, petting, rubbing their ears, rubbing their muscles to loosen them up a little bit. They always get a treat when they're done. Most of the time, they're not as interested in the treat as they are in the hugs. And they just love it. So even if I were standing there not saying a word, they're still very, very happy.
What is your favorite gear or outdoor wear, you know, in these cold winter months? What do you put on?
That is a great question. To enjoy the outdoors in the wintertime, you need to dress appropriately. Your base layer, according to my experience, should be breathable to wick the moisture from your skin so you aren't wet. I like wool or wool products so that it wicks the moisture away into a next layer. And so layering is very important. You can always take layers off and always keep your ears and your head covered if you're cold. That is the first place you're losing heat.
Well, Mel, thank you so much for joining us. This has been fun.
Thank you so much. I love talking about this sport. I love it so much. And if anyone is interested, I will share my knowledge and bring you in so you can do something exciting and fun this winter.
Melissa Amernick is vice president of the Wisconsin Trailblazers Sled Dog Club. We have a link, by the way, to the club on the morning show page at WPR.org. And now it's time for Wisconsin Life. Here's producer John K. Wilson answering a Wisconsin question about the state capitol.
Standing in the rotunda of the Wisconsin Capitol building, everything feels really big and important and majestic. You're right in the middle of Madison and right in the middle of state government. But who chose this spot to be one of the most important places in the state? Nancy from Madison wanted to know. She asked, how did the Capitol end up on the isthmus? What was the politicking that went on behind the scenes to settle on this piece of land? We talked to Bethany Brander with the Wisconsin Historical Society to help tell the story. She says that in 1836, when Wisconsin became a territory, things could have gone a lot of different ways.
There were actually 16 other locations proposed. So one was Green Bay. Another was Mineral Point. Other people wanted places that could become really great cities. So Milwaukee was one of those cities proposed because it was on Lake Michigan. It could have been a city called Wisconsinopolis, which of course doesn't exist today, or another city called Wisconsin City, which has never existed also.
So where did Madison come in? Brander says it all has to do with a politician and businessman named James Duane Doty. When territorial legislators were meeting in Belmont in southwest Wisconsin to pick a new capital, Doty went there with a plan.
So on his way to Belmont, he passes through the Four Lakes area. And conveniently in April, earlier that year, he had bought a bunch of land, which is now downtown Madison. It's the Isthmus today. And he eventually, on his way down from Green Bay, brings a surveyor with him and surveys the land, maps it out, and brings this piece of paper with him to Belmont.
On that piece of paper were the plans for this modern-looking, imaginary city Doty called Madison. And he got to work doing whatever he needed to do to sell his idea.
So when Doty gets to Belmont, it had already been known throughout the territory about the conditions that the legislators were facing at Belmont. When legislators got there, there weren't a lot of buildings, so a lot of them were crammed together in two buildings, laying on the bare floor. It was cold. Accommodations just weren't very nice. And so word got out. So when Doty arrives in Belmont, he comes with a bunch of buffalo robes. And so when he gets there, he's hanging out these buffalo robes. He's showing people his map, telling them about his paper city called Madison. And he named Madison after the recently departed President James Madison. He was kind of playing to people's patriotic sensibilities here, and it worked.
But Doty was also offering more than just buffalo robes and patriotism.
He also was offering people some real estate in Madison. He bought up all this land with his company, and he wants to make money off it. So he's letting all this land go to these people for cheap. And so by the time the final vote for the city of the new territorial capital happens, about half the legislators own land in Madison, plus the two clerks of both houses. So it kind of helped sway people's opinions to make the capital of Madison.
By 1837, construction had already started on the first Capitol building in Madison. We heard from Bethany Brander, the Southwest Sites Program Manager for the Wisconsin Historical Society, telling us how Wisconsin's Capitol ended up where it is. This story came from an audience question as part of the Wisconsin Project. Submit your question, and we might answer it in a future Wisconsin Life segment. Go to wpr.org/Wisconsin. Wisconsin Life is a co-production of Wisconsin Public Radio and PBS Wisconsin in partnership with the Wisconsin Humanities Council. Additional support comes from Lowell and Mary Peterson of Appleton. Want to make sure you catch every Wisconsin Life story? Subscribe to our podcast. Find more Wisconsin Life at wisconsinlife.org and on Facebook. I'm John K. Wilson.
And Wisconsin Life is part of our weekly edition of Wisconsin Weekend here on The Morning Show. So what's happening in your part of the state that could reach all corners of Wisconsin? Send your ideas for Wisconsin Weekend to mornings@wpr.org. That's mornings@wpr.org. And we'll check out your tip for a future Wisconsin Weekend segment. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. This is Wisconsin Weekend on The Morning Show. You're listening to the Ideas Network.